You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, joined this week by Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Nicole. Welcome, gang.
Hello.
So happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa. Yeah, December to you. It's Fanboy Versus the Holidays.
December ween.
Yes.
Did we lose JD?
No, I hope not. Did we? I'm here. Please tell me I'm here.
Are you there?
You slipped out of sync for a second.
Uh-oh. So we may be having technical difficulties with Cox, who is my internet provider. So let's hope not. If not, I'll just keep going on without you all because I'm recording this. So, yeah.
I'd say it goes without saying that what your internet provider does suck.
Yes. Very crafty, sir.
Thank you.
I see what you did there.
Very crafty indeed. So, yeah, this is our holiday show. We will not be doing a show next week because in America and other parts of the world, it's Christmas. And
no,
so we have to watch Doctor Who.
That scares me because I'm.
Yes, I will be watching Doctor Who. That's exactly what I'll be doing.
It's Christmas, so that means it's Doctor Who, and yeah. That's the most important part of the holiday.
I don't want to open the presents. I just want to see the Doctor Who Christmas special.
Yep, I don't care about any of that other stuff. What's important is what the Doctor is doing. So
exactly.
And Gail Simone apparently has been sucked into that world, so I'm very excited about
that.
God. I saw her wanting to know about video games with Doctor Who, and I think you responded to her, McFeely, and said, just don't.
Keep well away.
So, yeah, I don't know. I've never tried those out, but I can't imagine that they would be the same experience.
Supposed to be a PS3 game coming. I don't know if that'll be any good.
It'll be bad, too.
It'll be bad? Okay.
Yeah, can't imagine. So, while we're waiting on Nicole to come back.
What the heck is happening?
Yeah, I know. The world is turning upside down.
She's still there.
Expect an episode filled with technical difficulties. We're just going to say that right now.
Just going to fly on through.
But we're just going to, we're just going to power on through. So, Chris McFeely, get us started. What's in the news this week?
Oh, it's not good news this week in the news, dude. Do you follow anyone from Jerry Robinson's passing last week? Early this week, we got, the old adage about deaths coming in threes proved true again with the news that Joe Simon, co-creator of Captain America, passed away this week at the age of 98. Being brutally honest, I didn't actually know he was still alive.
I mean, ancient in that.
Yeah,
respect,
I mean, you know, fair play. That's a good long run. And I'm happy as well that means he got to see, well, hoping he saw, you know, the Captain America film.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's got to be, you know, because when he invented Captain America, there wasn't film. So, no, that's a bad joke. Anyway, I almost wish there was an afterlife because somewhere I just imagine him punching Hitler, and that would be pretty awesome. But
we got punching Hitler. I mean that was like the first issue. Yeah.
Yep.
So.
But we also lost longtime Teen Titans artist Eduardo Barreto this week as well. Same day, only 57.
Yeah, that sucked.
Complications from meningitis, I believe, were the cause. He's a great unsung hero of DC, you know, mostly recognized for his long run on Teen Titans. But done a lot of other work that he's just sort of overlooked for because he had an unfortunate tendency to always follow really popular creators on books.
Mm. Mm.
There's a great tribute to him up over on CBR. Check that out if you want to know some more about him. You know, even his death comes following the news of Joe Simon's. You know, there's a poeticism about it.
Now he did draw, and I saw the. It's odd because I had like just passed it in my shop the other day, but the Luther, what is it? What do they call it? The unofficial biography or whatever of Lex Luthor. Yeah. So I'm almost interested in picking that up more so than I was before, just to kind of see his work on it because I've heard it's good.
Oh, watch out! They'll put the price up on you.
Yeah, probably so. Such is the way. Such is the way. So.
Those were definitely the two big bits of news this week. But on Marvel's end of things, we've had the announcement of their full slate for the second round of Season 1 graphic novels. Now, you may have forgotten about these since it was a while back when we first heard about them, and we haven't heard a lot about them since. They are new hardcover graphic novels that are kind of like Marvel's answer to DC's Earth 1 in that they're original hardcover graphic novels. Dedicated to the origins of characters, but they're not revamps the way DC's Earth ones are. They're just retellings of the origin. And the first slate's going to be Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, Daredevil, and the X-Men, which will all be coming in the first quarter of next year. And we got the second round was announced this week, which is going to include Fred Van Lente and Tom Fowler doing the Hulk, Tom DeFalco, surprisingly, and Horacio Dominguez on Ant-Man, and the one I'm totally buying, Greg Pak and Emma Rios on Doctor Strange.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody who's followed Pak and Van Lente on Herc and Hulk over the last couple of years, like, definitely one to check out. But being honest, I'm more buying that for Emma Rios' art. Now, she did a Doctor Strange miniseries with Mark Waid a couple of years ago, but the way her art has grown and changed, even in the short space of time between then and when she's just recently done Osborn and Cloak and Dagger and is about to do this small Daredevil Spider-Man crossover with Mark Waid as well. Yeah, she is going to produce some crazy Ditko visuals. This is going to be good.
I'm just like my brain is exploding at the visuals that are going to be in a Doctor Strange Emma Rios comic. I mean, that's just going to be fantastic. I'm excited. And you probably can't hear me, huh?
No,
I can hear you.
Okay, good. Crushed it. Yeah. There was a look of wonder there for a minute, and we've got so many tech issues. I'm freaking out. So, anyway, but yeah, I'm just like the visuals that are going to be in that. I just expect.
Yeah.
I hope I don't expect and too much, but yeah, I probably would totally buy that.
Truly the worst news of all.
Oh.
This week. Oh Lord.
I need to...
almost hidden, buried deep in the March solicits. Sitting right there, just not even trumpeted within the main body text, just a little two words sitting next to the artist writer price page count of Tiny Titans number 50. Final issue.
What?
What? Wait, I just got here. What's going
yeah.
on?
Yeah. Wow.
Tiny Titans ends this March with issue 50.
Are you so?
What are they doing? I don't get it.
Why do you like, hurt is it me a so? Conspiracy? This is Christmas. You're not supposed to be doing this to me.
What a Christmas present.
It's really ending and becoming two books, like the Transformers comic, right?
Oh, if only.
If only.
No,
Tiny Titans I look forward to reading. It's not a project to do.
Tiny Titans and Not So Tiny Titans. That's the two books.
You cut deep, sir. I did not hear about this yet. Oh.
Hang on.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's bad, but Baltazar and Franco are moving on to a new book. It's going to be called Superman Family Adventures, which just basically seems like it's going to be Tiny Titans, but with the Superman family. I imagine we can fully expect the Supergirl from Tiny Titans to be the stars of that. And it's not going to be Superman from the thighs down anymore. It'll be full Superman. And they say as well, you know, a lot of Twitter activity over the death of the book, but the word is that the characters are not gone. So, you know, we may see some of the Tiny Titans in this book as well.
Hmm. So not gone so much as changing maybe into something else.
Yeah.
That's almost tolerable.
Almost. I'm not happy about it, though. The irony is painful. Marvel cancels a bunch of books. I don't get a single one of them. I'm not affected. DC cancels one book. I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now you can feel the pain that the rest of us felt when all the books that we were reading over at Marvel felt.
Ghost Rider.
Yeah, okay. The one book that I'm reading that got canceled. But anyway, I was not very happy with it.
I didn't care when that book was gone. I didn't care. Ghost Rider, not Tiny Titans. Tiny Titans is
gone.
Let's see, where's my drop button?
Tiny Titans. Okay. Void. The deep, painful void. But hey, I got Transformers Rescue Bots to creep in there and fill that this week.
I have it on the DVR. I haven't got to watch it yet. So I'm hearing mixed things, but I'm hearing generally positive things from the people that I trust the most. So
Rescue Bots is to Transformers what Tiny Titans is to the DC universe.
You know, I hate that I agreed with Ender, but I kind of agreed to Ender's point, which when people are saying that Rescue Bots is supposed to be Transformers for kids, it's kind of like, Transformers are supposed to be
Transformers for younger kids.
Yeah,
younger
it's
kids.
Transformers okay. for kindergartners specifically. Okay. It's not. No, he's wrong there. He's just wrong.
But oh, okay. Well, fine then.
Yeah, that wouldn't be anything new. Oh.
Anyway, so Nicole is apparently just going to continue to drop in and out for this entire episode. Which is doing terrible things to my really beautiful video setup, but I'll press on. So,
care about looking at our heads?
No, not really. I'm sure. Maybe the YouTube people, but so. Well, I guess that's it for the news then, right?
That's about it. Yeah, it's Christmas next week. That's news.
Yay!
Yeah. Yay!
Yay!
Where's that that new Ghost Rider trailer? Was there anything that came out of that?
Oh yeah, that did happen. Wow, that film looks dreadful in a massively entertaining.
I didn't see the new trailer yet. I just saw that.
Well, if you saw the first trailer, you saw this trailer.
Oh, okay. So it's pretty.
Well, this trailer gives us plot.
Now actually, it's... that's true. Yeah. What is he trying to save the life of a child who might turn into the Antichrist?
He's what?
But the kid's name is Danny. Are they going there? Is it a Danny
ooh,
Cat?
Ooh, that would be awesome. Okay.
I want to see it.
Not that I care much about Dan Ketch, but whatever.
Oh, I'll go see it. It's out in February. I go see that.
Oh, yeah. And, well, I guess, and it's sort of related between things, which is the G.I. Joe Retaliation trailer came out this week as well.
What happened there? It's like somebody decided to actually make a G.I. Joe movie.
I know.
Crazy.
You know, my commentary on it was, like, my first post was that it looks like a G.I. Joe movie with Bruce Willis. And I realized that sounded derogatory, but I didn't really mean it to be. You know, I really meant to be, this looks like a G.I. Joe movie that has Bruce Willis in it. You know, like that's a good thing. The last movie, I don't know what it was. It was certainly
Bruce Willis at the end, be damned. Like, that trailer might as well have just cut off an end head as soon as Cobra Commander came up with the chrome face.
Yes.
Mask.
I was like, okay.
That's all I needed.
Done.
That was it for me.
You
done.
Got it.
Thank you. I'm out of here.
Here's my $15. Thank you.
They had me when the Cobra flags dropped from the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought the strangest thing when I watched the original G.I. Joe movie that just really puzzled me. It's like they want to make a G.I. Joe movie, and they've made a movie of the cartoon instead of making a movie of the comics. That's what struck me as odd, because the comics are the thing. I mean, I'm not a member of the G.I. Joe fandom or anything, but as I understand it, like, the comics are the thing. They are the core Joe canon, and certainly to the exclusion of most other things. And I was really surprised that the film was basically a film themed around the silly weaponized excesses of the cartoon. Whereas this one seems to be the same again as well, but like more so.
Yeah.
As long as I don't get exosuits, I'm happy.
Yeah, what was that? Anyway.
I don't remember that.
It does seem to be G.I. Joe Renegades, the film.
It does. Yeah. It does have that
which
sort
is
of
presumably
quality.
Then when they realized that they were producing a film that had such a similar theme to it, why they decided to hold off on another season of Renegades and then functionally retool whatever's coming next from that to maybe flow out of the film a little better.
So, like, is Roadblock going to be voiced by The Rock in the second season?
Then die in the first episode.
Then die in the first episode and become a zombie.
Oh, my God.
And I swear to God, I have nothing against The Rock, but Terry Crews should have been Roadblock.
Yeah. Sorry. Quick
no.
change there. I don't mind the... but the Bruce... People... I don't know. I've come back to the Bruce Willis thing a few times and... well, in particular, he's playing Joe Colton, which for those that don't know and haven't, and like I said, I didn't know, I had to research it, or have someone told me, which is that he's supposed to be the original G.I. Joe. Joe Colton is the original, like, whatever the...
12-inch doll.
Yeah, the 12-inch
He's got the kung fu grip or something, is that what it is?
Yeah, exactly. And apparently his cholesterol is a little high.
He appeared in the,
He was
Marvel
in the comic, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was in the last G.I. Joe Transformers crossover as well.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, So, I mean, he's, you know, that character's been around and stuff. It's not something...
He's the guy that the team is named after.
Yeah. Which kind of works, I think, for Bruce Willis. You know, I think that, you know, I think it kind of works for him. And like I said, I don't know anything about the character otherwise. I haven't seen it in the fiction.
I don't know that there's much to know. He's just Chuck Norris.
Yeah, you know, so there you go. Bruce Willis is fine.
I don't think he has much of it. He's just that cipher, that 12-inch realistic with the... he doesn't have realistic hair. Bruce Willis is...
that's long gone. But yeah, I think it's kind of cool. I mean, I like the line.
Looks like she'll make a better Lady J than Wonder Woman as well.
So
that's a thing that's happening. That looks entertaining, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so after stalling for like 5 or 10 minutes, we still don't really have Nicole back, so I guess...
Skype hates her.
It really does.
Liking her today.
Yeah. We may have to try to press on without her. So I guess we'll get started then with reviews, as it was, and Chris McFeely's video is now frozen on my side.
Is JD freezing up for anybody else for a second?
Yes, I'm seeing
on my end as well. You're freezing for a second, and then you're picking up exactly where you left off. Awesome. It's like freaking, it's weird. Yeah, but it means there's...
Maybe we're talking to JD in the past. Hey, JD!
I know, you seem to still be operating in real time. What the fuck?
Yeah. Total JD, technology fail.
Turn right! Right, turn left!
Turn
go left!
Okay. The funny thing is that since I'm recording locally, my video is going to be like solid, and it's you guys that sound crazy, so it's kind of awesome on my side.
So it's business as usual is what it is.
Right, so now, they're going to be like, JD's fine, I don't know what's wrong with these guys, they're like talking about him being in the past, I don't know. So anyway.
Maybe that means we are too! Oh, blimey, I've gone cross-eyed.
All right, then. Well, as Nicole once again attempts to join the call, we will go then to Chris Triplett to begin the process of reviews.
Comic books.
Yes. The funny book things that we talk about on this show.
And we have more fucking live listeners than usual as well today.
This is hella entertaining.
Twice as many normal live listeners this week.
So
this really is falls, you know?
Yeah. Hi, all the live listeners. Wave if you say hey. Can I get an amen?
Yeah. Hip hop hooray!
To talk about something though, before I get to my review, I wanted to just kind of touch on I got Avenging Spider-Man number 1 and 2 because I missed them. Yeah, I know you didn't like them.
I didn't like the first one. So
they're not bad. They're just not amazing Spider-Man good. Which, you know, did you really expect it?
I mean, really?
I don't know.
I could hope, I guess.
But the reason I wanted to talk about them real quick was just mostly because of the Marvel Digital thing. Because these are comics that are coming with the code where, like, if you buy the physical issue, you get a code, you enter it into the website, and then you get a digital copy. So I tried that, and I was praying and praying and hoping that it would be through Comixology, and it's not. It's through the Marvel website.
Of course it is.
And I tried it through the Marvel website, and I started reading through it, and it's not good. It's bad. I know this is free, but I'm thinking, okay, what poor sucker is buying this off of the website and paying the, what, $4? This is like a $4 comic. I assume they're charging $4 for the digital copy of it also. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't navigate good. I was reading the second issue of Avenging Spider-Man, and on one of the pages, like the top of the page had a gray spot. Like, you know, like, you know, like how, like, if a comic gets scanned or something, sometimes the scan goes bad and there's like something funny with it. It looked like somebody had scanned a comic and the top page of it was nothing but gray, but I could still see the lettering on it. I mean,
wow.
This is bad. I got to the end of the comic reading it, and I had to even write this down because I thought it was hilarious. So I finished the issue, and like when you finish a comic in like other digital things, it'll say like, "Hey, you just finished this comic. Do you want to rate it? Maybe you want to try this comic because you might like it." I got to the end of Avenging Spider-Man number 2, and it said, "Thanks for reading. We hope you enjoyed Captain America Reborn number 1. Bye, Captain America number 2. Bye, Captain America number 2, and continue the adventure. Thanks."
A reader is you.
And I was thinking, yeah, I enjoyed Captain America Reborn number 1 when it came out 2 years ago, but I didn't just read it just now. So it's got problems. Wow. Is the point I wanted to make. You know,
buggy.
I assume the Ultimate comics are going to be the same way when they come out because they're doing the digital thing with those, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think what first one's going to be the Spider-Man, I guess, that I'll get. So
yeah, I'll buy the comic, of course, but still, why can't they just do it to Comixology? It's so awesome. Comixology is good.
Because it's not their thing. They want you to get their thing.
If
they're
going
to give it away for free, they want it to be their thing.
I don't care about their thing, though. That's the problem.
Well,
but that's what I wanted to rant about. I know they care. But I just wanted to rant about that because I thought that was just really kind of crazy and stupid. But Batgirl number 4.
So basically, you just complained about something you got for free.
Yeah,
just to bring it full circle. I'm not being critical. I'm just saying.
It sucks that I'm complaining about something I got for free because I understand I got it for free. Like for free, I guess it's fine. You know, hey, it's a digital copy. But I'm thinking, okay, if that's the same copy that somebody's getting, if they're actually buying it off of their website, I'm thinking, boy, those people are getting screwed over.
So, you know, so what you're really saying is, if you're gonna pay for it, go to Comixology.
Yeah. If you're going to pay for it, go to Comixology because Comixology is nice.
Awesome. And get a Kindle Fire to do it on.
And I'm not getting paid to say that. I wish I was, but I like it, and I recommend it. It's good. In fact, I read my comics this week off of Comixology because I had no choice.
Unpaid advertisers.
Yeah, but let's talk about comics. Let's talk about stuff that I like. Did anybody read Batgirl number 4? Did you guys get around to it?
Yeah.
Yes.
I have it.
Okay.
Hey, we all read it. Cool. Okay. Yeah.
Well, those of us
that
I'm going to be interested to hear your thoughts now on this one.
Well, overall, I liked it. I mean, it was okay. It's just that this is like the big – it's supposed to be the big issue. This is like where we end the whole storyline with Mirror, which is strange because like the last issue was the one with Nightwing.
Yeah.
That really felt out of place. I felt like, you know, does this really need to be in issue 3? Shouldn't this story be like issue 5 or 6 or something down the road? And like number 3 actually be leading us more towards the conclusion with Mirror? And I mean, not to complain about that issue, but just I just felt like that issue just was kind of not good, and it just didn't work for me.
It was like a fine total, issue. Yeah, total interruption of what was going on.
It was a fine, you know, single issue story, but at this point, you know, the way the story's been going, I kind of felt like they need to get through this first before they went to like a kind of a single issue standalone story, you know, unless like they're planning on making Mirror like her, you know, her master villain like the Joker or something, like, you know, oh, he's this ongoing threat, but no, I don't want that. So, like, I started reading the issue, and, like, it starts off with she has the dream sequence where she's having, like, bad bad dreams about her still being in the wheelchair and about, you know, how she feels about it. And she kind of, lets it go and says, oh, it's just survivor's guilt. You know, she's got survivor's guilt. But basically, what's going on is this issue takes place on Christmas Eve. And she's, you know, kind of, yay, Christmas. This is a Christmas-themed episode because, like, Journey into Mystery also has a, you know, Christmassy. Yeah.
Christmas.
And she's like, yeah. Yay. But she starts to, I don't want to, like, go page by page about it. I mean, there's, like, things about it that I really liked.
I don't want you to either.
Yeah, like the stuff where like she goes out just to fight some some guys mugging some people, and I love the little thing. They've got an app.
I love it. There's an app for that. There's an app for finding where Batman is.
They have a Batman app that tells them that Batman is stopping a bank robbery or something downtown, so they can mug these people down in this alley. But when like Batgirl shows up and Batgirl starts beating the crap out of them, I think one of them says, I don't have a Batgirl on my app. So
there's no button for her.
There's no button for Batgirl. But yeah. And it's just like a little thing, but it was just funny. But it fits in with the story because after she saves these people, they talk about how, you know, thank you, you know, you saved us, you know, we'll get to actually see our kids, you know, on Christmas Eve because of you. And that kind of like clicks with her, with the whole stuff with Mirror. She decides, well, you know, Mirror's whole origin is that his whole family died, including his two kids, and it's Christmas Eve, so if she needs to find him, where does she think he's going to be? Well, he's going to be visiting his family in the graveyard. So she leaves him something. I think it was like a note or something to kind of, goad him and point him in a direction so she could, like, you know, hey, I'll have him on my terms and take him down. And it basically is just a fight sequence. You know, at that point, you know, she has a big old fight with him.
In a hall of mirrors.
Yeah, in a hall of mirrors, which is awesome and ironic and interesting.
And she does make that great crack as well. Exit the wallflower, enter the dragon. And like, enter the dragon.
I loved that.
That originated the whole fight in the hall of mirrors thing. Mm-hmm. That was pretty awesome.
That was pretty awesome, yeah.
I did like the part though. Well, I liked and was sort of interested because it's like I felt like I was watching like a 70s like detective, you know, sort of drama when she's talking to the people and they're like kids and she goes, kids, I gotta go look at something. You know, it's like any of those where it's like there's always the trigger thing and then the detective figures it out.
But Jeff Goldblum in Independence Day.
Yeah, exactly like that. Yeah.
And she does like a very kind of classic Batman-ish villain way to defeat him by projecting that footage of what had happened to his family, and then like it just kind of projecting back onto him and him freaking out. It's like, oh god, it's like Scarecrow getting attacked by like his fear gas, and then like seeing Batman as like a monster or something. I like that. I thought that was a good way to kind of take him down.
She figured out how to be a Bat family hero, which is to be a total dick to the villain that you're fighting.
Yeah. But what did anybody think like that this next bit was just really kind of like off-kilter? Like, she delivers this great, it's a good speech she delivers about miracles and how Gotham sucks and the best and worst suffer, and you take your miracles whether they deserve, but it's like the page beforehand, he's screaming and ranting, she's coming at him with the fist and goes, mirror, and you're expecting to turn the page and her to deliver some awesome one-line quip as she punches him out, and instead she delivers War and Peace.
Yeah. It's really a lecture.
I mean, you know, it's like, I get why
like,
they...
Mirror, I guess I've got 7 years bad luck, punch, or some shit like that, you know.
But it's different than, like, Batman, who would have just beat the crap out of him.
I know, but it just seems staged a little weird to me.
Yeah.
Oh, man, the cold's really trying hard.
I'm on a different computer.
Okay, volume very high. Downturn.
It works. Yeah, okay. I'm on a different computer, so.
Okay. Oh my gosh. We've got the... Okay. You might back your volume down just a hair and then we'll be good.
The volume? Okay.
Yep. But it's a little lengthy, but it's at least better than I mean, at least it isn't like a sort of, what am I thinking, the CSI, like, meow, you know, where it's like, mirror, it's reflect not, this,
I guess bam! For that 7 years, bad luck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't it's find not my glass. That. But I do like, you know, I mean, yeah.
Yeah!
It's a bit
yeah.
It's a bit much, but I do like, you know, the where she keeps saying, you know, it's miracles whether they deserve it or not. And she says it like a couple of times. And yeah. Then she's like, you believe me, I know. And then you kind of get a little bit of closure with that. I mean, because we even found out in this issue, I kind of skimmed over it that, you know, how she's walking again. She kind of, you know, kind of touches on it a little bit, talking about, you know, a clinic in Africa and, you know, saying that, you know, we don't say cure in the house because, you know, that's a word that we don't use, you know, at the Gordon house and everything. And you get like a little bit of stuff like that in it, which I feel like you get a little bit of closure. But I think honestly, at the end of this issue, all I can think about, okay, so the mirror stuff is done. There's a little bit of this, you know, closure with her now, you know, walking again. What are they doing in the next issue?
Well,
you know, and we get the big ender, and I ain't gonna say what happens, but a character shows up at the end of it. Boom, you know, splash page. What's going to happen in the next issue because this character showed up? But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm thinking about, you know, more than that. You know, what's going to happen?
Well, I mean, I'm sure that will all come about as well. It's just, you know,
and I would really like it if I could say that was the.
Did I fall out of time again?
Did I lose somebody? Because somebody was talking and then they stopped.
I think we lost. Now we're losing Chris McFeely.
You there?
I'm here.
You're there. Okay.
I'm what, here.
Chris McFeely is now not here. So
I didn't
oh
hear
my gosh.
What did you say?
So he'll be back in hopefully just a second. But.
But overall, I did like it, and I'm going to continue to get the book. I'm not going to be like, oh.
I know, I'm not dropping Gail Simone's only book now.
Yeah. I'm going to keep getting.
Is that her only one now?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It's more than that. You know, it's more than just like, hey, this is Gail Simone's only book. I like Batgirl, you know.
No, I like it. Now, like I said, it's different than Batman in that respect, you know.
I really want to know, like, what her her roommate was going to tell her, because, you know, Babs told her about, you know, how she used to be in a wheelchair, and then she was going to tell her a big secret. And she didn't. She didn't have time. And I think there's something that's going to happen there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it does seem like there's something else, you know.
It's like it turns out, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm the Scarecrow's daughter, you know. I'm
yeah.
going to kill you. Right, or
yeah.
something
I'm
like
going to kill you with the ceramic knife. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
So.
No, I actually like this one. I thought it was good.
No,
yeah.
I like the story of the mirror.
Yeah, I don't think he was like an earth-shattering villain, and I don't know that we'll see him again, but...
No, but he was an interesting villain, just because he had a good backstory, I thought.
Yeah, it was an interesting way to, like, you know, tie a villain into, like, what she's going through, you know, without it being, like, the Joker. Because it could have been the Joker, and that would have been, I think, too much.
Well, it's like, what if the Punisher was a Batman villain, I think, is basically what you kind of get out of this, you know. It's like, what if the Punisher from DC, instead of becoming like a semi good guy vigilante, had become a crazy bad guy? Then, you know, he would be the mirror, basically.
It's like your kids are alive, but mine are dead, and your kids should have died. Boom.
Something like that. Yeah.
Like the anti Punisher. Oh my gosh, that comic would last like two issues.
Yeah, that'd be it. Hopefully Chris McFeely will come back. Yeah. Maybe. This is full of technical fail this week, but we are just powering on.
No. Fanboy versus oopsies.
Yeah, really.
We have that Christmas spirit in us that's like, you know, driving us forward.
Yeah, I think my computer decided to go on Christmas vacation.
So, and that huff lets us know that Chris McFeely is back.
For Christ's sake.
Yeah, it's it's bad this week. It's bad, people. So,
okay,
so
have we moved on yet?
We're about to move on. We had just finished up. If you have any final thoughts on Batgirl.
You want to make the final thoughts there?
Yeah, they'll be completely contrary to everything else because this is my last issue about Batgirl.
No!
Well, okay.
Wait.
Why did you drop it, by the way?
I just feel, apart from like the rather painfully telegraphed ending, and the it's like, oh, the roommate has a secret. What a shock! I could not have imagined.
It's like Scarecrow's daughter, and she's gonna like murder her at night. That would be awesome.
Yeah, because if the crazy look on her face when she unwraps her cooking, I mean that's gonna come into your bedroom with a knife at night, Barbara. You know, there is some artistic slips in this issue, and that's one of them. Because I don't think whenever you unbuck, you know, you get a cooking utensil for Christmas, the first thing you do is wheek it out of the box and grin like the Joker, like and holding it up and you know,
is this the daughter of like Sweeney Todd or something?
You know what? I don't care, and that's perhaps its biggest crime. I knew from the second that character was introduced, a couple of issues, I mean, oh, I have a secret. Oh, really? Do you? Well, you didn't manage to make me care about you before you revealed that fact. And you know, I think it just the Mirror really fizzled out as a villain.
Oh, I like.
Yeah.
Him.
I mean, like,
he was great in the first issue, and is it a good origin? But in the third issue, given how just completely, he had nothing to do with it, basically, you know, it's just diverted away into a Nightwing thing. And then in this, it's like she fights him in a Hall of Mirrors, and it's kind of it, really. I mean, I guess there's probably it's probably slightly deliberate that he just serves as a reflection, a reflective, you know, for something to reflect Barbara back upon herself and help her come to these conclusions about herself, which was something we had already concluded anyway. And, you know, something that I definitely... What I say about Batgirl, it's like, I can't actually technically fault Batgirl. That's the thing about it. I can't really have a go at it because it's doing everything the right way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we said it before, a lesser writer would come at it from a different direction, throw back in the tights and just plow ahead. You know, a good writer on here in Simone, she is approaching it all the right way, doing all the post-traumatic stress stuff. It's definitely just capital R, capital W, the right way of doing this story. But respectful treatment has not, has not mitigated the fact that 4 issues in now, this book has not made a case for why Barbara should be Batgirl. The mission statement of this book has been, if we make Barbara Batgirl, and we can do post-traumatic stress stuff. And that is not a reason for Barbara to be Batgirl again. And we all know that the reason Barbara is Batgirl again is because Dan Didio has a massive erection for her as Batgirl.
It's because everybody remembers her as Batgirl. Basically. Really going to buy a book with spoiler as Batgirl? I don't think anybody did.
Well,
but, hey, it wasn't a bad book. I liked it. Did you lose me?
No. I did, yes.
Sorry.
I did. The sound went out on my end.
Yeah.
He's doing the same thing you're doing. I just, like, at this point, I don't feel any case has been made for Barbara because she can't go out and she can't freeze up every time somebody pulls a gun on her. And she can't complain about how she's out of practice and about how she shouldn't be doing this perennially. She has to get back to doing it. And I haven't seen a reason yet.
You know, that'll probably be like she punches the Joker in the face and then she's better. You know?
She's done that.
Yeah.
And since he doesn't have his face, then that should be easier, right?
That's right. I forgot about that.
You could just work that thing off a punching bag or something. No, I just haven't seen what she brings to the thing as a character that Steph didn't, or Cassandra didn't, or even at this point, really, what distinguishes her from Batwoman aside from not being a lesbian?
Yeah,
you know, and what she's bringing to it is the issues that stem from the fact that she shouldn't be Batgirl. And it's just, you know, as I say, it's treating it totally respectfully. The subject matter, well, it's not the writer's choice, and we know this. You know, this was not Gail Simone's idea to do this. This was handed down. And she's absolutely approaching it in the best way possible. And I think she's approached it in such a way that she's really brought herself around to the idea as well, because she always speaks, you know, she seems to be on board with the idea at this point. But I have come to the conclusion that I am not.
I'm good with it. I'll keep getting it.
keeps, it's just, if I put my ear to this book, I can just hear it going as it creaks audibly under the weight of the baggage that the whole idea carries with it. And I can't get past it. I have no particular attachment to Barbara. That's the thing. I have no particular attachment to Barbara as Batgirl or as Oracle. I wouldn't class myself as a fan of the character. Just as somebody from the outside looking in on a character that I have no attachment to, one way was better than the other, and this is not the way that is better.
Yeah.
And, you get this surprise at the end. I say surprise at the end, and I'm like, and which one are you? Are you the biological one, or are you the one that, you know, it's like, I don't know what physical state Barbara Gordon's familial continuity is in.
Right.
To even know.
I was thinking biological, honestly.
Well, that means that this is not, I can't really let into this without spoiling it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that means that this is... It's just hard. It's too hard to get stuck into. Just suffice it to say, I don't even really know what to make of the character who's appeared at the end, because like so much else that kind of gets in the way of understanding this character, I don't know what still stands for her. We don't know at this point if she was still Oracle. We don't know what she did the time she was in the chair. We don't know where her familial status stands. So we don't know exactly.
Yeah.
This is, you know,
there seems to be some editorial notes on that, but we haven't seen it in the comic. So. You know, which would seem to be
the
part
only
that matters.
Book that I get that I feel has been adversely affected by something like that, and that is another example of the book just creaking under the weight of historical editorial continuity problems. You know, it's like some characters, like with, well, Batwoman was written from before that, so it doesn't really matter, but it's like with Action Comics, it's a fresh start, you know, with, what else am I getting? Firestorm was a fresh start. Justice League's a fresh start. So, yeah, I guess all the ones I'm getting are the fresh starts, whereas this one, but then even the ones that aren't, like, this book seemed to me is the one that's making me ask the most questions, but it's not supposed to be making you ask those questions because they're not mysteries. You're not supposed to be looking at this and wondering about them as if they were mysteries with questions that need solved and will be down the line. They're just problems.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which need
to
overcome.
I think the only question that I actually asked when the comic came out was like, you know, was she in the chair or was she not? And then I was surprised that they answered it pretty quick.
No, I
thought,
well, she would have been in the chair.
Maybe they wouldn't.
You know, it's like, I actively can't fault its execution of the idea of a handicapped woman walking again. That story is good. It is good. But there's too much baggage. The book is just struggling under the weight of all the ideas that surround that very... I wouldn't begrudge anybody liking the book. The book, I think, deserves the vast majority of the praise that it's getting, you know. It's characterizing the hero well, but it's just, I feel I'm getting crushed under the weight that is on top of this book, and it hasn't pulled me in enough or made enough of a case for why this character should be Batgirl versus anybody else, except for the really manufactured editorial artificial reasons that she is again, and I just can't get with it. I have to leave it at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I tend to agree. I mean, I think that I'm with Triplett, though. I'm probably going to keep reading it, but I totally get and respect what you're talking about.
I've had like one issue that I felt like it wasn't bad, but it was just kind of missed me, was the Nightwing issue. I thought, well, there is a Nightwing issue for this comic. It just doesn't happen in issue 3. It happens like
happen there.
Issue 8 or 9 or something. You got to get through Mirror first. You don't do it in the middle of Mirror, you know. But other than that, I've been happy with it. I mean, I've dropped books for you know, more problems than this book's got right now.
Yeah. So yeah, all right, cool. Well, I guess we move on then, and hope Nicole stays up and to get a review.
It'll be a Christmas miracle.
Christmas miracle for the Christmas issue.
But I wouldn't blame anybody who had given up trying to listen to the stream at this point.
So it's very listenable. It's just a bit odd.
Yeah.
That's coming from your end. We don't know how this sounds filtered through you.
Oh, I mean, the part that's going through them is, I'm sure, is fine. So.
That's what you keep saying, but I don't
believe
you.
Lady Rex, survive, you will survive. I don't know if she's talking about the stream or if she's talking about something else. But I'm still listening to what she said.
Everything's all, it's going to work out. It's going to be okay. So, all right, we power on.
Okay, I will try this. Keep your fingers crossed. So, okay, I'm going to review the yearly Marvel holiday special. Now, I want you guys to take a look at the cover. I think you could show the cover.
Yeah, lots of characters.
Yeah, there's tons of characters. Yeah, look, there's tons of characters on here. Well, if you like any of these characters, guess what? I'm not going to be reading about them. There's two characters.
I'm shocked.
Thor's on that cover. Did Thor come back to life just for the Christmas special?
Guess what? He's one of the characters that are not in this comic. So.
Yeah, because he's dead.
Well, the characters that you see that are on the cover that are in the comic book is Ben and Spidey.
Oh, great.
Those are so good choices for a Christmas issue.
They're good.
You mean a Hanukkah special.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about
that. So it is a group of four different stories. The first one's called Cold Hearted Christmas. That is the Spider-Man one. Yeah. And so Cold Heart escapes prison, and Spidey is on the lookout to go capture Cold Heart. And so basically you see that he's on the prowl, and he meets up with Cold Heart. And basically, all in all, he just wants to escape to be with family. It doesn't work. And he's back in jail, and guess what? Spidey gives him a present. Yay. There you go.
Okay.
I am not kidding. It's very short and sweet. All these stories are. The second one is about Wolverine, you know, Logan teaching a group of the kids on how to get along and get into teamwork. So he's Canadian. So what do you think he teaches them?
What do they have in
Evil
Canada?
Evil Canadian things?
Not Christmas.
Yeah. He teaches them hockey.
Oh.
So, and he says, there's one rule to this game, and you cannot use your powers. And so they just got to learn how to work as a team. So all in all, their lesson
has ever played hockey in his life.
So all in all, they have this big, huge hockey match. And at the end, they all get along. Yay. So
just like in hockey.
Yeah, just like in hockey.
Yeah, no teeth knocked out or anything.
Like I said, I'm going through this really quick because, again, these are sweet, short, simple stories.
And we don't know how long your internet will last. So.
Yeah, exactly. The third one involves Nick Fury, because when you think of Christmas, you think of Nick Fury.
Awesome.
Oh, hell yeah.
Does he kill somebody on Christmas or something?
Or does he not kill somebody on Christmas?
A little bit of both. So he's fighting a bunch of Hydra. That would be awesome.
You're basically the same.
So he basically is, you know, fighting a bunch of Hydra agents. You don't know what his assignment is. All you see is he's got tons of
Christmas
fighting
present.
Going on. He's whooping some ass. He breaks a guy. He snaps a guy's femur right in half. You know, you're just like, oh, that's kind of nasty. So, and they are looking for the boss of this compound. And it comes to be, oh my gosh, why can't I think of his name now? Oh, sorry, the Scar. So he's trying to get a message out to the Scar. And the message is, now spoiler alert, that he has just become a father to a beautiful baby boy. And so, you know, you find out that Scar is working with Nick Fury, that he's just undercover. And of course, Nick Fury's like, well, I just can't meet up with you and not come out with an injury. So guess what? He shoots him and he wishes him Merry Christmas. And then at the end,
Merry Christmas.
I'm not kidding.
Yippee-ki-yay.
But like, I've got to make it look good, knucklehead. This way your cover isn't blown. Your mission's way too important for the whole thing just to go flying out the window, which is exactly about what I'm going to do. Merry Christmas. And he flies out the window, and then you see the scar with the picture of his new baby boy and with a tear coming down his face. And I thought that was the funnest story out of all of them.
And when is that story set?
It doesn't say. It doesn't say.
Scar was all right. Like an old Nazi guy, yeah. Who's, I'm pretty sure, was dead.
Says,
there you go.
I thought this was kind of cute. The name of the story was Old Saint Nick. Did it, Nick Fury?
I see what they did there.
Now I'm getting like images of Nick Fury with like a Santa's beard and a hat. That would be awesome.
it was a cute story. It was really cute. And then, of course, the last one is called Chinese Food for Christmas, which involves Ben. And there's a mysterious guy going around just ransacking the place. And he's stealing, like, decorations and causing a hoopla. And then to come to find out, when he finally catches up with this guy who's stolen all this, he's stealing it for these orphans who had who didn't get their Christmas because the social workers and stuff, they couldn't get to them in time. So he went out and he stole.
Were they orphans from Yancey Street?
I was gonna ask.
Yeah, they gotta be.
Yeah,
because it can't be a Christmas issue unless the Yancey Street gang do something to Ben.
Yeah, or don't do something to Ben because it's Christmas.
Because it's Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah, and so they did get their Christmas. Unfortunately, the guy that was stealing all the stuff, he got some clobbering done on him. So she's out cold.
It's a Christmas clobbering, Tom.
Yeah, and he's like,
it's a Hanukkah clobbering.
It's a Hanukkah clobbering.
Ben teaches him a lesson. He's like, oh, you don't. He's like, we could go over to my place and we could celebrate Hanukkah together. And so he teaches him the meaning of Hanukkah. And of course, you've got like Moon Knight
being
there as well.
Punched.
Yeah. you've got Moon Knight there. You got Kitty Pryde.
Moon Knight Jewish? Okay. I think Moon Knight is Jewish.
Kitty Pryde. Yeah.
I thought Moon Knight worshipped crazy Egyptian gods.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they spent a lot of time in Egypt. So.
This is the one thing about it. Kitty Pryde, for some reason, the way whoever drew her, her waist is way too skinny. I mean, she looks like...
There is no such thing in comics.
They shaved way too much of her of the Photoshop.
Skinny waist in women comics? No. No such thing.
But it just seems out of proportion to me. But besides that...
That's the point!
Yes.
Enormous breast, like 2-inch waist...
It is Kitty.
So Ben teaches the orphans about Hanukkah with Chinese food.
That sounds about right. I don't know when.
At the beginning, they were all going to get Chinese food, and you know he was about ready to head home, and all this happened. So, yeah. So you know what? For a holiday issue, I don't think it's worth the $4.
Yeah, Marvel's holiday issues really fell off. They used to be a real event up to a couple of years ago, but they've just sort of dropped off. And I mean, the last one I remember was when an evil Ultron was programmed by someone who hated Christmas to attack the Avengers, and it was dressed
up. That sounds awesome.
It was great, and it was like Tony Stark had remote controlled mistletoe that he kept flying after Spider Woman. You know,
nice.
Like I said, the I thought was the Nick Fury one because you know he's just kicking butt and doing what he does best, you know, and then. At the end, when he shoots him, he's like, Merry Christmas. Like, okay, there we go. But, yeah, it was all
Merry
right.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.
Exactly.
Thank you for change.
God. Oh, man.
See, it's very cutesy. Like I said, when you see Logan, you know, being Mr. Good face. It seemed a little weird.
I don't think Wolverine has ever been shown to play hockey in his life. Now, obviously, he'd be great at it because he's the best throwers of what he does. But
yeah.
I think that may be a little jump there.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a little more to it, but not a whole lot more. You know, Iceman's out there and he's even cold, so.
Because it's ice hockey.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, there's a few jokes in here that actually made me laugh a little bit, but It was all right. Nothing to write home about. Like I said, I basically gave you the rundown.
Nice.
Nothing big.
Cool.
Like there you go.
Awesome. There.
Happy holidays.
And we made it all the way through without her dropping out, so that's good.
Yes!
Oh, even better. Okay. Cool. Well, then, and then we lose Chris Triplett, as I say.
Oh, no.
This is awesome.
Oh, God, no.
We are on a roll, kids. So.
Bad day. Christmas has done something.
On to Batwoman, then. So I'm going to do Batwoman.
I'm going to read along since I haven't read this yet.
Yeah, Batwoman.
So let's see. The first part of this is basically two stories juxtaposed, like we're used to.
Story.
One is basically, I think, a fairly tasteful love scene between
absolutely
Batwoman and the other character that I can't remember her name.
Maggie.
Yes. Thank you, Maggie. All done in like these sort of black and white.
Oh, totally tinged out watercolor gray panels.
Ah, beautiful. Beautiful
totally
shots.
Tasteful. Catwoman, please take note.
Yeah, really. Like this is really.
There you go. Taste, yeah. Catwoman taste. Yeah, that doesn't.
This is how
you do a love scene in comics. I mean, yeah. It's maybe a little bit gratuitous, but this is more tasteful than most films.
I think it's a nice. I think it's a nice juxtaposition between. Yeah. Because you have, again, it's all about the juxtaposition. You have this sequence, you have that sequence going on next to Flamebird out on her own and basically getting gutted like a fish.
Yikes, I know.
Ow.
Yeah, she, I don't, who is this hook-handed person? Do we know?
You see that? Yeah, now, I know there's a character called the Hook.
Okay.
But I don't think this is him. Now, I heard an interesting theory that somebody threw out, and I wonder if it's true. I'm very, it's like if the next issue is supposed to be the fifth and final part of Hydrology, because I think it is, there's a lot has to happen in that last part.
Mm-hmm.
But there might be a bigger story that'll grow beyond that, because I heard somebody theorize that this could be the hook-handed figure from the urban legend of the hook-handed killer, you know, two kids in a car, man.
Oh, crap.
Mental patient, hook for a hand, they find the hook on the door. Because the Weeping Woman is an urban legend.
Yeah.
Come to life, apparently.
Huh.
So are urban legends coming to life in Gotham?
It's like the Fables version of urban legends. They're real! They kill you!
Yeah.
So, there you go, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. So next to this images of ecstasy, you have images of pain and suffering, essentially, as Flamebird gets just gutted.
But look at how beautiful the pages of pain and suffering are.
I
look
know.
At the way the panels,
I mean,
are burning. Look at it. It's as if the panels are pages burning away at the edges. Oh my God!
This is how comics should be drawn.
Not a double page spread.
No, I mean it's. I think the whole first set here is.
Yeah, I think except for the first and last page, everything in this is a double page spread. So all the ads are jammed at the back.
Yeah. Like, yeah, they are, aren't they? That is one thing I noticed. I got to the end. It's like, ads. Oh.
Yeah, we got to fill these pages up. But this is like, suck it, digital readers.
Yeah, pretty much. Sorry.
Sorry, but.
Yeah. I mean, and this, like, even.
Do what we want.
Even like the image, like the where it has like the title, they almost can't even tell it's there for a second.
Yeah, I had to pause and is that the? Oh, it is the title.
Yeah,
you know, I had to stop and look
because it's the bird outline with the smoke and oh man, her
oh
cape
my
is
God,
amazing.
I didn't even notice that was a bird until just
oh,
now.
Cool.
Yeah,
I'm so busy looking at the words.
Yeah, and I mean her cape is great. I love how it really looks like flame even within the panel and bleeds into the edges of the panels even. This is how comics should be drawn, kids.
One,
I'm just going
to... Well, no, I don't think you would want every single comic to be drawn this
no,
way.
No, but at least with that...
I love the art in Batwoman, but I haven't like got the last two issues. Is the story...
Well, let me
because,
qualify
like,
what
I read the first two issues, and they were okay, but they weren't like the driving focus of this comic. It was like, this comic is gorgeous, you know, and that
well
was like,
yeah no and I think there's story here, but let me qualify what I said about the art. I don't necessarily want every comic to look like this. I want every comic to be, I think comics should be thought about in this way. How do you exploit your medium is the deal to me. And that's that's what I'm seeing here.
Yeah. It's doing things no other comic is. You know, if you think you... I've said it before. If you think you know what a comic book page can look like, think again.
Well, it's doing things... It's not just that. It's doing things that... You know, think about like a Bendis comic. It's not a knock on Bendis. But no. Bendis comics could be TV shows. The way that they're
either
typically
big,
laid
huge
out.
Huge panels or lots of little tiny panels.
Right. So they could essentially be a TV show. Like, you could essentially use that as a storyboard to make a TV show. This is a comic. You know, yeah, you could sort of do things on film to sort of achieve that same effect, but there's no way to get those two stories juxtaposed together, plus the imagery, and not, like, completely overwhelm your audience with, you know, media. So I think it's doing things that are unique to comics, which I like. But anyway, to your question about story, yeah, I think there's story here, especially in this issue. I think some elements have picked up.
Definitely.
You know, we're seeing the relationship between, you know, Batwoman and Maggie sort of growing. Flamebird is in...
See, you know, that's another reason that this this love scene works. Because this is a big step,
yeah,
for the characters. You know, yeah, this actually means something.
Yeah, this is like a relationship.
This is not like where it's like, look, Catwoman and Batman are fucking
right.
You know,
yeah, this is a relationship that's really
that's not what that is. You know, this is something that's been built to for a while, mm-hmm. and it is these watercolor tones, and the gray somehow serve to make it more sensual somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said.
Oh, but maybe I shouldn't dwell on that anyway.
Well, it's no, I think that, but I think that that's fine. Like I said, I think that's good.
Nobody cares.
So Flamebird, though, however, gets found by this, what is it, DEO? The
Chase. Yes,
the Chase and that group, which is very bad. And then, I mean, most of this is, there's a...
This is a detective work issue.
Yeah, basically there is a lot of detective work going on. Batwoman trying to find out. We find out some details about the watery woman. As far as, like, I think Batwoman even finds her father and. The Chase actually gets a name out of Flamebird. Tells her that she's dying.
The dickiest move ever. Oh my god!
Horrible.
Hate this woman, but I love her.
Yeah. She's like, oh, there's nothing we can do to save you. Is there anyone we can call? A parent or boyfriend or someone? And she says, Kate.
Don't want you to die alone.
Yeah. Ugh! Yeah.
She gives up Kate's name.
Yeah. Yeah. Very bad. Very bad. And then they're going to go just dump her at Gotham General. Like, so, question as to what... I assume that Flamebird will survive, but she's not in good shape right now. And
yeah, I'm looking at this, I'm like, no, she doesn't.
I mean, in some ways, it is very much a bridge issue, but it definitely unveils some elements. And like you said, there's a lot of things that do have to happen, but I think we're set up for those things to happen.
Yeah,
in the next issue.
It seems like if the next part is the final chapter, there's a lot of stuff still has to be revealed and resolved in one issue. So, especially if this Hook guy is supposed is that, you know, if that theory is right, maybe there is a bigger story going beyond these five parts, because it is called Hydrology after all. So mm-hmm. it's a story very much about this water woman and not something about urban legends, you know. So I think you've got maybe a seed for something bigger coming down the line. But, look at this page where all the panels are in her cape. Fucking brilliant.
Yes, and you because you find out that, you know, this woman's kids had died because she was drunk or something, I think is what.
Oh, that's nice. It.
Yeah, they and they had drowned.
I mean, if it really is her,
that's this thing. But that's at least the line that she's following. So, but yeah, so interesting. Anyway, good stuff. Batwoman, like I said, beautiful work, and I think the story's moving along.
Chris, yeah, and definitely the cliffhanger at the end of this one, which is surprising since it has nothing to do with the Water Woman again, is there's definitely, this is more than just a five-part story, you know, there's a lot more brutal in that book.
And you see that Water Woman as Flamebird is getting beat up, like she's...
Yeah, she just pops up there and is like, sorry!
Like she's overseeing all that, so it's kind of like, maybe there is a bit of...
There is something creepy about it.
Yeah.
She's going to be saved by water in the last issue. There you go.
Well, from the description, she is a water woman, so that does seem kind of strange.
Then you have the juxtaposition between fire and water. There's a lot of good juxtaposition. I like it. Anyway, it's good stuff. Check it out. Batwoman. You should be reading it. Chris Triplett.
I read the first two issues. It was fine. It just, well, you need to just keep going. Fantastic.
You just got to pick it up. It's better than Batgirl.
I think if I needed, if I went back and I read maybe the previous issues, I'd like it better.
Well, okay, maybe it's not better than Batgirl, but visually it's interesting.
As far as I'm concerned.
The art is fantastic. I'm not going to dispute that. I mean, it's the best looking, probably the best looking comic out there. I can't think of anything that looks better than that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just that care. I kind of wish that the art was in a different book. You know? <'Cause then I'd laughs>
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. So there you go. Batwoman. Chris McFeely. On to the good one. On to the big stuff. On to awesome stuff.
Oh.
I'm excited about this.
Avengers Academy number 23, in which X-23 joins the team.
See what he did there.
Oh. I thought the Fingers comic didn't lie to me. All right.
Yeah. So X-23 joining the team, though, is really not the focal point of this issue. Like, it happens. But, she's creepy, and she creeps out everybody. I mean, the first page is her and Tigra totally going, tearing into each other with their claws, just as a little demonstration for the rest of the students. And everyone
other
else.
Students, do not fight with X-23. She will hurt you.
Yeah. just a friendly reminder.
It does go on then to point out just what a great choice X-23 is to be on Avengers Academy, as somebody who was created in a lab and reared by evil people to do evil. She is, and as somebody who is really trying to work through that, you know, she actually fits in really well with all these poor kids who have suffered at the hands of Norman Osborn. You know, Metal's like, they forced you to be like this? Oh, you'll fit right in. And Finesse starts talking about how she has difficulty with her emotions as well, and she can help with that. And stuff like that.
Flashcards.
Awesome. Yeah, I have good. At least Finesse is trying, so that's nice to know. But the whole issue is narrated by evil future Reptile, who is, if we recall, inhabiting the body of past Reptile.
Yeah. I have trouble, even though I have to say, like, damn you, Christos Gage. Because, you know, yes, it is narrated by what I guess we would consider to be the evil Reptile from the future. As the issue unfolds, I sort of start to go, because what you find out, you know, and again, I don't know how linear we'll go through this issue because it's sort of past and present, present and future, but. They're not trying to change history.
Yeah, they're here to make sure certain things go the right way.
Yeah, and so you're like, well, isn't that good-ish?
I mean, that's the thing. You really think off the back of that that one issue where it ends with him being possessed, that is like, oh, damn, evil, because they all look evil, and the great fear is they're going to become super villains. You know, they're all standing menacingly around a globe looking down at it.
Yeah.
Evil, you know?
That's a society of super villains, if there ever was.
Yeah,
one.
But
this is maintaining that sense of mystery as to whether or not they are or not. We don't know what it is they're trying to secure, because Reptile goes around and makes sure a couple of different things happen. It's funny because, like, we have the big thing of the issue, the big promoted part, is that this is where Stryker and Lightspeed have their talk, and we kind of talked this out on the news last week anyway. But this is the one where Stryker comes out to Lightspeed, and she helps him deal with the aspects of his past, and I wouldn't go so far as to say he helps her, but you know, he gets her to talk about some of her. Issue seems like the wrong word, because she seems fairly comfortable with the way she is.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, one of the things that they talk about, you know, sexuality a little bit, and, you know, touch on. There seems to be, like, one of the things that gets mentioned is, you know, the difference between bisexuality and homosexuality. And I did like that she touched on some of the bias to bisexuality, really. I mean, there is.
A lot of my L and G friends think bees are just gay people who haven't come all the way out.
Right. Yeah, and that is very true, and it's something that, you know, well, and I don't know, it's interesting to see that discussed, because that doesn't get discussed a lot in comics. You know, a lot of times, especially since comics tend to be, you know, we talk about and criticize comics for being guy centric. You know, guys are like, oh, she's bisexual, awesome. But that's not really, I mean, that's not really the way it works in reality, you know, for people who are bisexual. And like I said, typically they do get the, oh, you're just not picking a side or whatever. So I think that's interesting that gets addressed here. Stryker, though, seems not as ambiguous on the issue as Lightspeed does. Lightspeed seems to be comfortable to be sort of, well, not really categorized. I think she even almost rejects bisexuality as well.
Because she's got nothing going on at the minute.
So she's kind of like, well, I got nothing. But yeah, Stryker seems, I mean, she even asked him the question. It's like, you've been with women, you know, was that what you want? And he's like, well, no. It's like, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So I liked it. I thought it was very tasteful.
I mean, there's a couple of like little art hiccups here. Like the one noticeable run really is where Stryker spends one panel bawling uncontrollably, and then is fine on in either panel another side of it. You know.
Yeah, which I don't know how, you know, some
kind of doofy expression on his face as well. I haven't pulled that bit off too well.
Yeah, as he tries to get his composure, but we don't know what the time.
Yeah, I know, but it's like it is just like boom.
It would have been nice to have like maybe
storytelling goes, it does just jumps from
maybe like there needed to be another page break in there or something just to give you, but put an ad on that page and then come back to it. But yeah, awesome. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And then there's this great bit that follows that with Metal and Hazmat on X-23, where Hazmat actually encourages Metal to go up and talk to her about the fact that he's still having issues over the killings that he had to do in Fear itself, you know. And she explains it out to him that all the things he's feeling are totally normal, and that, you know, the fact that he feels like he wants to throw up because of it is, you know, that means that it's good, you know, it's okay, you know. The Yoda of killers has spoken, as Hazmat said.
Yeah.
But awesome. Then for whatever dicky reason, I don't know, like, why, if he had to do it or whatever, but, you know, Reptile just slinks up and then whispers to Hazmat, looks like you've got some competition. And then Hazmat drags Metal away from X-23. And it's like, oh, what the hell, man? Don't ruin that for them!
But apparently, but like I said,
so
it's
so much worse stuff is going to come.
Yeah, and I love it. But I love that idea that one word or one thing, it's referenced back into Doctor Who. It's like that. She looked tired to you. You know, it's just like, yeah. How one phrase or one word can change everything. And you see, though, that he's really put out by this. I mean, it's really like, it's like,
he hates that he had to do it because he knows what we don't know, which is whatever's going to come next.
Yeah. Oh, damn you,
Christmas Man, I really wish I could have read it.
Yeah,
awesome.
It's really.
I will have it probably next week.
But the fit hasn't even hit the Shan.
No,
so.
We haven't even got there yet. You know, the team, Giant Man and Reptile and Tigra and Hawkeye head and Quicksilver head out to rescue a boy named Jimmy Marks, who's being targeted by, what are these guys called again?
The
Purifiers.
Purifiers.
Strikers, religious nuts. And, you know, they take him back to the academy and they think about offering him a position. They're not sure if he's a mutant or what he is. They think they want to refer to him to the X-Men, you know, but Hawkeye's like, you know, stop all this nuts. And then Reptile's like, well, let's just ask him. And so the kid's going to stay at the academy. And you know something's going into obscure territory when I don't know what it is.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because it's not even the cliffhanger. Turns out the kid is Hybrid, who is a human dire wraith hybrid from ROM.
Sweet.
Say that again.
He's a hybrid of human. He had a human mother and a dire wraith father who took human form. He's from ROM. ROM Space Knight.
That's awesome.
Wow.
What are the chances that ROM Space Knight could show up in this comic? Is there any chance of that?
No, they can't use the character anymore.
Damn it.
I know. But, you know, these guys, you know, he's got a plan. He's here for a reason. Reptile knows he's here, but he also, but Hybrid can tell that he's a time traveler as well, because he's still got his, he can direwraiths are magic users as well as shapeshifters. Direwraiths are the deviant Skrulls. You know, we have the Eternals and Deviants on Earth. Well, direwraiths are the deviant Skrulls. That's what they are.
Mm.
So now you know. And, so he's here for a reason. Reptile is, you know, is going to help him. And then I don't know if we really want to blow this last page.
Because this is the thing that made me go, wow, maybe they're not evil.
Yeah. We jump back to the future for one last page. And, you know, there's some... It's like, oh damn, kind of heart. It's not quite heartbreaking because it's more blindsiding than heartbreaking. But it's like you find out some stuff, and it's hard to say, but it's like it opens up a whole horrible door for what happens to some of these guys down the future.
Yeah,
and you know, if you read Fred Van Lente's Taskmaster miniseries as well, there's definite echoes of that.
Yeah.
Things are, there's a lot of, this is really where, as you say, the fit hits the shan, as far as, evil future reptile possessing his past self could have really bubbled under for a while, but there'll be none of that.
No.
We are right in here.
No, and I mean, again, you kind of get sympathy for this character, and then you come back to this moment with Hybrid when he's like, I'll give you a list of people you can eat.
Yeah. You know,
oh, like, wow. He's not,
yeah. And it's, you're like, well, that's not cool. You know, but okay. And then you have this last page, which is like, holy crap.
He's just trying to do something. You know, there's good mystery here. And the typical great just character work of Avengers Academy, you know. This one definitely deserves some attention. Hopefully, as I say, maybe that little note in Defenders will have caught more people's attentions. Maybe the word of Strikers coming out will get a few more readers on this issue. And if they stick around, definitely the job will be done.
Yeah. This is good. It was just awesome. I loved this issue.
It is not merely good.
I loved this issue. So
you can't go wrong with Avengers Academy, as we always say.
You should be reading this.
Cool. I'm glad I started picking it up.
Yep.
I need to. I'm dropping Green Arrow, so maybe I'll put that
there
on.
You go. Drop Green there Arrow.
I haven't read the new Green Arrow yet, and I can already tell you it's better.
Wow. All right, then. So, moving on. And the only person that can really lead up this review is, again, Chris McFeely.
You shouldn't save me to the end, because then I wound up doing two things back to back.
No, we just love to hear you talk, so we're just gonna...
I don't think anybody minds.
It's Journey into Mystery!
Yay!
You got Volstagg in here, you have to.
Yeah, you gotta get Volstagg in here. And it's a Christmas issue of Journey into Mystery! Yay! This is very actively a single, done-in-one Christmas issue, so that anybody...
I love this one.
It's great as well.
This Christmas issue is so much better than the Marvel one.
This is the breathing space issue before the next arc starts in January. Because I was listening to an interview with Christos Gage. Kieran Gillen. And he, it turns out, is planning a 30-issue arc for Journey into Mystery.
Oh,
with,
wow.
With?
Yeah, that is.
With Loki?
Yeah, well.
Better be.
But presumably, yeah, it's a 30-issue arc, a story, and the first third of that, the first act of the three-act structure was Fear Itself, the first 10 issues. That was it. So here we now have the downtime breather issue in between this and the start of Act 2.
Oh, I'm excited.
In which Asgard would like to try and strengthen relations with humanity by actually doing some proper Christmassy stuff. Or what is it they just call it?
Yule.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. The All Mothers approach Volstagg and ask him to contribute in some way. And it's like, will there be traditional mead? In most bountiful quantities. you know, oh, what did they say? We were hoping to recruit you for a part of the festivities. Of course, to tend the great fires and bring the sacrificial meat to the proper boiling point. No, oh, stag. Oh, ho, ho, am I to ensure all and sundry are properly anointed with the seasonal blood? No. Oh, stag. Well, am I to carve the Yule log with my whittling mastery? To lead the wassailing about the borough? To crack the whip of the wild hunt across the skies in Odin's own chariot? That's not what we had in mind. Well, what were you thinking of? Cut to Volstagg. Ho, ho, ho.
Ho, ho, ho. Come on, how awesome would that be?
Oh, my God, I would sit on that lap. There would be room...
Oh, man.
But it's like he's. I think he does actually appear to be doing it in Asgard, so it is for the Asgardian children and everything. So, have I got a present for you, little one? Is it a magical battle axe crafted out of enchanted Uru? No, it's some manner of thing made of human plastic. It has a little screen and buttons. I'm sure that will be of great use when the trolls come for your family.
Yes.
Don't blame me. Your house gets burned down.
Yeah. Yeah.
You should have asked for something more practical.
That's awesome.
Man. Yes.
But unfortunately, Loki is not feeling the seasonal spirit because all the other kids of Asgard are bullying him.
Yeah,
he gets a Merry Christmas knuckle sandwich.
Yeah. The popular gift of a Yuletide fist.
God. Poor kid.
Oh, poor Loki.
as he says to Ecole, he's beginning to see why he turned evil.
Mm.
And Ecole's delivering a lot of prophetic gibberty jabber. It's as dark as it gets, just like winter when we're furthest from the sun, everything will turn back to whatever, you know.
I always liked the season. Nothing can wreak as much mischief as a well chosen present.
Yes, and Loki returns to the Kiev where Leia is staying to find that she has delivered a present. the present, it turns out, is a load of little tiny fire-breathing puppies who just come out screaming profanities.
This is awesome!
I love this!
Murder, murder, murder! Death to Asgard! Death!
Cock my leg on the rainbow bridge.
I love that little guy. He's so cute.
Oh, man.
Perhaps later. So, yeah, it turns out that these, when they went to hell during Fear Itself and they left the Hell Wolf to deal with Garm at the gates of hell, well, Garm has written a letter. I don't know how Garm would write a letter. Presumably she dictated.
But, I didn't think about that.
Yes. The letter just says that she and the Hell Wolf fought, and then they didn't.
And then they did. I love that. It was just like, and then they didn't. You sort of see like the image like turns to the heart shape, and they like. Yeah.
I don't get it. Will you explain this to me?
Well, you see, when a hellhound,
Loki's face when, he reads
when a hellhound and a demigod wolf really care about each other
very much. Well, it turns out yes that these puppies are her litter, courtesy of the hell wolf. So,
oh, this is so cute. Oh my god,
proved to be such a ladies' man.
I love that line. Love it.
And, the Aesir, the All Mother, instruct that Loki has to find owners for the seven puppies or take the necessary measures. You know, and the little nasty wolf is just barking profanities in front of them. File high, queens! But then Journey into Mystery does one of those things that it does so fantastically that we haven't really seen since the first issue, where it takes what could be a graphic novel's worth of story and condenses it down into a lovely two-page spread.
Yes.
Telling it, again, it's as if it's telling you a story. And it's not as if you're reading a story, but as if you're being told a story, how he takes puppies to... First, Loki went to hell. He gave Mephisto. Mephisto takes a puppy. He'd taken a fancy to the idea of a nice big dog guarding his domain. Then Gaia decides that she likes the look of one of the puppies and keeps it. They give one to the New Mutants of all random characters to take them to.
Yeah.
Because Danny Moonstar.
She'll fit in just fine with the New Mutants. Come on.
Heimdall decides that one would make a great watchdog to help him in his task. Tyr down in Hell thinks, you know, a good dog to enjoy the hunt would be great. And then in that wonderful thing, Journey into Mystery Dawes, where it blends story and myth with our modern method of information dissemination. I guess that's really the thing, isn't it? I haven't really thought about it before, but I suppose, you know, it's the ancient oral tradition of the dissemination of information versus the most modern way of doing it, which is the internet. You know, it's the way those methods of telling stories colliding in the pages of Journey into Mystery. The cutest puppy was placed before a camera, and its legend was charted by Tumblr scribes and religious icons crafted from webcam shots decorated with bold fonts. It was but naturally cute thing.
You know what's really sad? That kind of looks like one of my dogs on that picture.
Does it breathe fire?
The donation button rang true and clear.
At Christmas puppy. But unfortunately, he can't find a home for the one that talks and spouts venom.
Imagine that.
Bastard. Nobody wanted him. Like, Mephisto's got that look.
Well, that's it's great. It goes all the way back through.
Oh, I nearly fell over when you see the panel of him trying to give the dog to Tyr, and it's biting on his good arm.
Which is just ironic. It's lovely. Not again. That is awesome.
And of course, you know, the metaphor is perhaps laid on a tad thick at the finale here. I mean, I think that the All Mother is doing it deliberately, you know. But they say, you know, they have the traits of the mother. This little dog is the father's child. You must understand that some creatures are just bad. Oh, I wonder what they could possibly be drawing a parallel with.
Yeah.
And of course, Loki decides that he can't kill the little puppy by throwing it back into the roots of the world tree, even though, like, Ecole's sitting there egging him on, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Loki goes and gives the dog a name.
Which is awesome.
And he is a good dog. Do you know how to fetch?
Kill you! I'll take that as a no.
Oh, I want more of this dog.
This dog better be back. This dog better be back. Because, my gosh, I love him.
He's living with Leia in her dirty great hole in the ground as she keeps calling it, which is about that. I have a present for you. If you say the gift of friendship, I will pummel you fiercely. No. He punches her in the arm and gets blasted for his trouble.
And
then he argues with the dog about what his name shall be. Thor, a Loki and Thorri, a boy and his dog.
Not Thorri, Death Ripper.
Thorri,
the death that prowls on legs. I'm going to kill you.
Oh my god.
You're going to be a good boy.
Loki sees himself in this little dog, and, you know, he's going to make sure he turns out well, because, you know, I think it's Loki's proof of himself, you know. If he can turn this dog around, this will be proof that he can make good too. Because he's doubting him. You know, the whole thing about this is that the season is like, he basically won the war for everybody, but he had to arrange for Thor to die so he could, and nobody can know that except the All Mother, who essentially now has him under their thumb because they know that.
Yeah.
And nobody else can, because, you know, it's not, everybody hates Loki already. So he's already doubting himself. This season, as they say here, it's at his worst, you know. He could see why evil is so appealing whenever everybody treats you this way. But that's the great thing, is like, that's far more, so much more interesting than the idea of little Loki actually going evil. So the sad thing is, years from now, when some other writer decides to turn him back into adult Loki and he turns evil again, it's going to be such a loss to society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, for these 30 issues that we will sit and we will enjoy as Loki actually tries to turn himself around and tries to make a proof of that concept in this dog. I don't think that anybody had any surprise that Loki kept this dog for himself. And he's going to make a great addition to the cast as well. And I would say that anybody who picked this issue up as a single one would hopefully know to judge. Because this is the best Christmas comic, like, in years.
Yes, definitely.
I've read in years. Because it's not just some, yes, you know, I mean, certainly one-shot Christmas specials, which are funny, or saccharine, you know, they have their place. Everybody's a little more lenient for that sort of thing around the holidays. But, you know, this is a great little story that is so much more than that. And in all the ways, it still manages, even in the midst of all of that, to exemplify all the best traits of Journey into Mystery from its, you know, blend of comedy and mythology, and its central themes of storytelling and the collision of the old ways and the new. Even in Volstagg playing Santa, you know, mm-hmm, screaming. Yeah.
That was fun.
Well, and nothing is more original Christmas than, you know, a Norse story about Christmas, because it sort of invented the damn thing. But
yeah, you know, yeah. And also, you know, I should probably point out the art on this issue now is by Mitch Breitweiser. And when I read his name there on the credits page, even before I turned the page, I was like, oh, Mitch Breitweiser, he is going to be a great match for this. But yes, I was right.
You know, and that's something I didn't mention, but I love the art, especially these early panels. I mean, it's so just glad. Like, it's kind of got almost like, it's like this blend of like a very classic Marvel style with yet a very sort of modern stylized take. I really like it.
It's like a Christmas card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like you went, Loki looks like a child and not, you know, a worn down adult.
Hey. Yes.
I mean, Will Sportasio, if, you know, I think we all agreed, if we could never have him draw another issue again, that'd be lovely.
Yeah. Please, yeah, put on something else. I don't know, just something.
I don't mind Richard Elson drawing it. He drew the Mephisto issue, mm-hmm, and I think he might be doing something soon. I mean, he might be doing something else with the series, but it was a real shame to lose Braithwaite.
Yeah.
Just like two or three issues before the end of the Fear Itself storyline. But Breitweiser would be a really, really good fit for it. I don't mean this in a bad way, but there is a sort of bleakness about the way he's drawn this issue, which is, you know, very much in tone with the wintry setting of it as well. But it just, you know, there's just this thing. It freaking screams Christmas.
Yeah, it really does.
It's just beautiful.
I love
it. It's like so night and day difference from Portacio's art. I love it. I hope this guy stays.
Yeah. And we'll see next month with the start of the next story arc with Mephisto coming back and Damon Hellstrom's in it as well.
Ooh.
And you know, hopefully this Christmas issue will pull a couple of extra readers in, or perhaps just Marvel's thinning down of the line will convince people to check out some new books.
That would be good. That would be good. Or maybe our recommendation. I think our recommendation alone should gain like two readers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
probably two readers would just leave.
Yeah. That would balance out. Yeah.
Those guys like it. Oh.
Ugh, Fanboy Versus said it was good. I better drop that. I don't. Couldn't understand what happened on that tech.
No, this
show
is just such a fun story.
I love it.
Come on. You cannot go wrong with puppies.
Murder, murder, murder!
Yeah.
Not even if a little devil dog goes wrong with puppies.
Yeah. It's so great. And seven's a very mythical number. So anyway, it's good stuff. So, awesome. So yes, read Journey into Mystery, read Avengers Academy, and we're sort of flaky on the rest. But anyway.
Read Batwoman.
And yeah, you probably should read Batwoman. We're not unanimous on that, but, you know, we think it's good stuff. I like Batgirl. But,
Journey into Mystery for sure.
But definitely Journey into Mystery. Definitely Avengers Academy. Especially since we're coming up on Avengers versus X-Men, and we know that some of that's going to tie in. We've got Children of Crusade is coming to an end. That's going to be big. So
the prologue for Avengers versus X-Men was out this week. Now, that was Avengers X Sanction number one, but none of us read it.
Nope.
I hear it's terrible.
You can tell how excited we are.
Gilby
read it, and he told me, don't buy this. It ain't worth the money. And I thought, well, okay, why did you buy it then? That doesn't seem like something you'd want. And he said, I just wanted it. You know?
Well, there you go.
And Gilby has a weakness for 90s, the vestiges of the 90s. You know, Jeff Loeb and Ed McGuinness doing Cable is about as 90s as it gets, short of Rob Liefeld doing the cover.
Which one was this one?
Avengers X Sanction number one.
Yeah.
I actually read that one.
Wow.
Oh, you should have talked about it. You should have actually talked about it.
I didn't. I wanted to review something holiday-ish.
Yeah, so. I know. You were quite right doing it. Crap anyway. So.
It's got my interest. Sanction does so.
Yeah. Turns out Cable's not dead, and he comes back in time to kill the Avengers because Blacksmith. Remember Blacksmith from the 90s? Tells him that the Avengers are going to. Yeah, seriously, he's gonna tells him that the Avengers are going to kill Hope, and that's the catalyst for.
So I'm holding out hope that my 20 issues with Avengers on the title will hold out for May. So,
do you have a bet with someone or something?
My shopkeep did say I think he would do something cool for me if I was right, so I don't know what that's going to be, but, you know, I just like to be right. That's more important than anything, really. I just like to be right.
And so, you like us to know it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when I'm wrong, I like to try to forget it, so, and pretend that didn't happen, so we'll see how that goes. Anyway, there you go. That's our show. As we mentioned before, we will not be here next week. We are taking a week off for the holiday, so don't come next week. But the week
we might not be back the week after either. That's New Year's Day.
New Year's, yeah.
I think New Year's Day. I'm okay with doing New Year's Day.
I don't know that I'll be here.
Okay,
I don't care. I could go either way.
Well, let's take 2 weeks off then and just call it good.
I think so. Yeah, we'll just start.
And then we'll come back with the best and worst of.
Yes, the end of year show. Yes. Yeah.
So we'll take 2 weeks off. We just decided that now. Editorial decision. Right on the fly. So,
we're allowed.
So, yes, we can. So, we won't be back on the 25th. We will not be back on the 1st. So, check us out that week after, which would be, what, the 8th, I guess?
Yeah.
So, come back on the 8th. We'll have our best of. The way we're looking
at... Send us your thoughts, yeah.
Yes, the way we're looking at that is we're looking at things that were published between December 1st of... Oh,
why
of
December 1st?
Because it makes an even year.
No, because we're doing the show on the 8th, so.
Right.
January 1st to January
1st we've already been...
would be the year 2011.
Yeah, but
I think you could include, like, the last
Did
couple...
Did something come out in December of 2010 that you just really want to include on the list?
God,
no,
I
was trying to get
a
12...
came out in December.
No, I wanted it to be before this month because we were thinking about it this month, and I really don't want late editions.
We don't have to get people's opinions until the end of the month.
You're harsh and Mamello here. I had a whole thing figured out, you know. We sent out a document and had an email, you know, that you could have replied to without blindsiding me on the show.
No, but I just come around at you.
If you find something that you found in December that you have to mention, then mention it. It's not going to kill
us. But I'll mention that it didn't come out this year, so.
Anyway. Fine, then. Anything published in 2011, check it out. Let us know.
We want the categories for, like, best ongoing, best...
We had this whole document that I sent out.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That like, I didn't want anybody could have...
And we need to include the worst, too, because...
I don't like including the worst.
I don't like including the worst. I want to just do
I
the best.
I do.
So.
Butcher Baker, there you go.
Yeah, that was... That's pretty easy. Let me pull up the list here. I don't know why I print these things.
You need to read it off anyway.
Look at McFeely making you work, Jamie.
I know. I was really... So, best artist, best colorist, best letters, best writer, best series, best single issue, best mini, best event, best trade, and best graphic novel.
So
all
that best series is going to Amazing Spider-Man, right? I mean, there's like no
content. Well, I think we should probably do best ongoing and best new. You know, like the Eisners do.
Best ongoing and best new. So ongoing meaning it's been around longer, best new.
Yeah, just best ongoing, so best series. That, well, let's best just continuing do, series and best new.
Well, let's just do best new series then.
Best series be that best started ongoing. In the 1960s.
Well, best new series would be something that started in 2011. Best series would be anything, even if it started in 2011. Right.
Probably Amazing Spider-Man. All right. There, sneak preview. Probably Amazing Spider-Man.
Probably Amazing Spider-Man.
Nah, mine's going for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
But see, now all the 52 have to fight for new series.
TMNT would be best new series because it's only like four issues in.
Yeah. Best mini.
Then the question becomes, do we consider the new 52 new series or not?
That's a good question.
That's the question. Is Daredevil really a new series?
No. Okay.
But it is the best.
But best mini Taskmaster, that's easy. So anyway, just a little preview here.
See, my opinions are totally different from you guys because I don't read like mainstream stuff.
It's okay. You don't have to be right.
I am right. I am the girl of this group. I will make sure I'm right by the end of the night.
Somehow I believe that. Anyway. So anyway, that's just a quick preview. I'm going to go all the way through it, but that's what we expect. I don't even know that we'll do... I doubt that'll be the whole show, I think, on the 8th, as we'll just...
We'll just talk that.
We'll just go all the way through. Best of. So be thinking of your best of. Tweet us. Use a hashtag. I think I came up with a hashtag. Yes. FBV best of 2011. So I'll tweet that as well.
You should tweet that because I'm on a different computer, so I'm not using Twitter right now.
Yeah, so I'll tweet that. And then so send us your ideas, your thoughts over Twitter, comments, email, however you want to. And, you know, because we may not think of something. It's a whole big year. We may not think of something.
I don't remember what came out 6 months ago. Fear itself kind of killed my head in the middle of the year.
Yeah, it really...
Are you sure we can't do a worst of list just for fun?
No. I know we should because there's so much crap I read.
I refuse because I'm with Chris on this. I like to talk about the positive stuff.
Survival guide for hunting Bigfoot. Awesome.
Here's the thing: I don't want to give time to things that are bad, right?
How about like
I don't want to give them
a category
any credit
that says we're so glad this is over, positively glad this is over. Does that make
no? That doesn't count. No. Veto. I get host veto on that.
I will just do a different podcast.
So big.
I really want to talk about the good stuff. You know, there's plenty of good stuff that doesn't get talked about enough, and there's plenty of crap stuff that gets talked about too much. So let's talk about the good stuff. That's what we like here. So anyway, there you go. Check it out. All that good stuff. So have a great holiday. Enjoy your new year, and come back and join us on the 8th. Yeah.
It'll probably be a show then.
Yeah. It'll be a decent show. I think we'll probably fill the regular time, but like I said, we won't do reviews.
And I believe that would be my first year anniversary with Fanboy Versus.
Excellent. Even better.
We'll be closing on our second birthday then as well.
And it's going to be issue 85. Giant size issue 85.
Wow.
Foil stamped.
So, awesome. All right. Well, let's get out of here. Have a good holiday. Thanks, everybody, for joining me, my crew, for Nicole Hill, for Chris Triplett, for Chris McFeely. I'm JD Church. And please... tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.